Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You may already know that the Football Ramble have teamed up with audible.co.uk to offer you a free audiobook of your choosing when you sign up for a free 1 month trial at audible.co.uk/footballramble. So if you want Why England Lose by Simon Cooper and Stefan Szymanski, I Partridge by Alan Partridge, or The Football Men, Up Close with the Giants of the Modern Game by Simon Cooper, then sign up at audible.co.uk/footballramble, or choose from a range of about 60,000 other titles. The 30-day free trial means you can choose a free audiobook, which is yours to keep, whether or not you decide to cancel in the trial period. Go to audible.co.uk/footballramble and sign up now.
Gentlemen, welcome to the Football Ramble. It's me, it's Marcus. I'm back and I've got three beauties with me. Jim.
Hello.
Pete.
Hello.
And Luke.
All right.
It's European Championships time. Nearly. It's preview time, to be more precise. And we're going to start the show. We've not got an opening question. We've got the opening of stickers.
Mm. It's traditional. Long-term listeners will know.
They'll be bloody loving it.
We always open stickers.
We're effectively picking our own five-a-side teams here, aren't we?
With
and
what
we don't
we
know
have,
what hand we've been dealt.
With what we have in our packets. Jim, you go first.
Okay.
It's not really an audio feature, this, so bear with us.
Yeah. One year we tricked Marcus into thinking there was a tournament that wasn't taking place, and I just made a lot of stickers for a fictional tournament.
And no members of his family.
Right. I've got my team. I've got Christian Wilhelmsson.
Oh, of Sweden.
Swedish midfielder. Yep. Rio Ferdinand.
Ooh. Oh, controversial.
A political hot potato.
He's got a shiny.
I've got a shiny. Oi. I have. I've got the German national team, seemingly represented by those two weird mascots.
He's won.
So
he's got a shiny
got
of the German
player.
Team.
Got an extra player.
Stick them in goal.
Angelos Charisteas of Euro 2004 fame,
yeah.
Mostly. Another shiny. I've got the France logo. So probably put that in goal.
Yeah. That's an absolutely magnificent start. Two shinies.
I'll have that made out of fiberglass. Whack it in goal.
France and German shinies.
Ferdinand looks annoyed, doesn't he? He's got, what is going on?
He knew what was happening.
You sure those two mascots aren't the Bender brothers?
They could well be,
Sven
actually.
Bender,
yeah.
Might be.
They appear to be Polish and Ukrainian. So,
so you only actually got three players?
Yeah, can I have the mascots? There's two of them.
Yeah, yeah, of course okay.
You
can.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Two shinies though, France and Germany. Excellent start. Petey, what have you got?
I'm opening, guys.
Yeah, yeah, go on.
Hey, guys.
Yep.
Oh, Christ. I've bent them a bit.
Just open the packet, Peter.
All right, they're coming out. Right. I've got a quarter. I think it's a quarter of the entire German squad there.
It is, oh, yeah.
Just the legs.
Enjoy. Yeah. I don't know whose legs they are. Is there a 16 there?
That's Manuel Neuer in goal, is there?
It's Neuer.
Yeah, it's got to be Neuer, isn't it? Yeah.
Okay.
No, because there's a keeper behind him as well. Oh, I don't even know. Where's
next,
the quarter?
Next sticker.
I've got Rolando of
Portugal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's pretty tasty.
He's Porto.
Yeah. I've got a mascot as well. I hate it when it's all organised, isn't it? So you get
is
a mascot.
It a
it's not a shiny. No, it's the two mascots of France this time.
Oh, France.
Are they
France
the same
well
mascots?
Represents.
They are the same mascots.
They're doing
yeah.
different things.
They've got very, very odd mascots for the year. They always have odd mascots, don't they?
Yeah. It's a blonde kid in a... Yeah, well... I've got Adam.
Oh, Dusseldorf, Polish midfield player.
Yeah,
is he midfield? I can't remember.
What's it? I'm not really sure how to pronounce his second name.
I'll tell you, it's Adam Matusic. That'll do.
That'll have a go.
He's not listening.
He's not listening.
And I've got Granqvist.
Oh yeah, the Swedish player.
So,
I
you
think
can
say Grant Holt for a minute.
Yeah.
I
was like,
what?
I can't really pick a winner out of our two teams, Pete. This is,
no.
It's going to be pretty tight.
Well, look how intense Andreas' eyes are.
Whoa, he looks like he's killed.
Well, enough of that, Peter, because Luke's opening his.
Hey.
Now, this is where.
All right. I've got the Greek mascots.
Okay.
Hello.
Oh.
Hello. I've got four shiny.
Oh,
this is rigged.
I've never seen the likes of it.
metallic.
This is unbelievable.
The live what? Studio you've got audience a hall. Is going absolutely bizarre.
You've got a hall of shiny.
This is what I've got. I'm not making it up. I've not got any players. I've got a Greek pair of mascots, an Italian pair of mascots, a Denmark pair of mascots,
Danish,
a French pair of mascots, and a respect sticker.
Which is the winner, ultimately.
You're going to lose.
Respect is the winner. So
respect me.
Right, well,
try and beat that, Marcus.
I can get a bit of pride back on this whole damn affair. Kieran Westwood.
Irish.
Irish, remember?
You've got a keeper, yeah.
You've got a goalkeeper.
Roman Shishkin of Russia. Lokomotiv Moscow.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's all right, isn't he? Robin Van Persie. Oh.
What a team!
Oh. Goodness me.
It's an actual team, isn't it? I've got a bit of the Portugal side, which includes Cristiano Ronaldo and Nani. So we'll have that.
Not their legs, though.
And Fedeschi of Ukraine.
That's an actual team. It's a decent team.
Yeah, you're going to win, mate.
Robin Van Persie, Nani, Cristiano Ronaldo, a proper keeper. You're going to win.
Yeah.
Nani's going to love the respect.
You have rigged this, haven't you?
You get the points.
Thanks very much.
Yeah. You win the points. Your boys win you the points.
Hoorah. Now then, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to move on with our European Championship preview. We're going to start with England, of course. They beat Norway in their first warm-up game, 1-0. First time England have beaten Norway since 1980. And the first time Norway have been beaten for a little while. I think 2 years. At home, sorry. 2 years, I think it was, something like that. Ashley Young scored the goal, Pete.
He did, yes. He played rather well. In a rather more central role.
He was just off Andy Carroll at the top.
Took his goal, though, didn't he?
Mm. So he'll be playing there for the first two games as well, which is encouraging. I'm glad. That's a good spot for Young. He's clearly done well there. He's a goal threat. You know, he's playing where Rooney will eventually play when he gets back. So it makes me strangely confident having him there.
He's got quite a few goals for England, hasn't he?
And assists as well.
Yeah. Good. No, I'm pleased. I thought they did okay. Norway have got this pretty weirdly good record for a team that seems to never qualify for any tournament.
Yeah, yeah, it's a funny one. Roy Hodgson was saying that he likes a number 10, doesn't he?
Yeah,
and obviously he sees.
He likes
Rooney.
A 4-4-2. That's a big change for a lot of those players for me.
True. I mean, 4-4-2, 4-4-1-1. I mean, he was talking about you need to play in between the lines as well. It's obviously a rigid 4-4-2. He tend not to do that.
He likes one striker to drop deeper, doesn't he? That's what he's saying.
Exactly. Ashley Young's not a striker.
No.
He's a full player, of course. He's not a striker. Yeah.
No, but I mean, that is undoubtedly Rooney's strongest position as well. So clearly, he's got that in mind.
So do you think that when Rooney comes back, he'll drop Ashley Young wide or just drop him completely?
No, he'll go left. Wide. He'll replace Downing with Young, I would think.
Do you think he'll start Downing?
It's interesting that he started him in this game, isn't it? It hints that he may. I mean, I think you made a good point last week that he's taken him because he's a naturally left-footed player, and I think he probably will.
Well, if you're playing Andy Carroll up top...
Yeah, they can combine to not score.
Well.
Yeah, good
they've
point, had a great Vic, season together.
If when England play Belgium at the weekend, surely Eden Hazard will be looking forward to playing alongside Downing, get a few tips.
Hazard.
This is what players are like in England.
Indeed. Andy Carroll didn't do too badly, actually.
No, he hasn't done too badly lately, has he? I mean, it's a reflection of his form lately. He's been pretty decent at what he's been asked to do. Clearly it seems that Carroll's going to be getting the nod. I wonder if he'll try Welbeck there or whatnot at the weekend if Welbeck's fit.
Who would you prefer to see there, then?
Holt?
Yeah, I would. Zamora. No, I think he'll start Carroll.
But who would you like to see there? Probably Welbeck.
No, do you know what? I wouldn't be opposed to seeing Carroll there, actually. Because I think...
But hasn't Carroll operated quite well as a bit of an impact sub every now and again?
There is that.
There's the Defoe option as well.
I agree with Pete. I think I would probably start with Welbeck and have Carroll to come on.
Well, but Welbeck's fitness is...
When Rooney comes back, him and Welbeck.
Mm.
Hey?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, fair enough. I think Andy Carroll will probably be... I don't know. I think he might start with him. If he's going to play wingers like he sounds like he might do with Downing and possibly Walcott.
I wonder if he will actually ever have a settled team because he's got so little room for manoeuvre. He'll probably still be experimenting in the group stages to find out what fits. You know, it's a tough opening game against France.
Do you think he'll be experimenting with not qualifying from the group stage? I think he might experiment.
I think that experiment might be thrust upon him.
Yeah. And you have to make the best of
those lab conditions.
Yeah.
It's interesting with Hodgson because he is thinking very much long term. And he said, it's not just the European Championships. This whole project is far greater than this.
I hope that the media and the general public at large realise that, because it's not all about the next game, it's mm-hmm. about the long term sort of view.
Which is what we've done for so many years.
I think, to be fair, that is happening as much as I've ever seen it happen with England. There's so little expectation on us, obviously, because there's been so much turmoil, so many sort of injuries to key players and the Rooney suspension. It's quite downbeat, and it's actually quite refreshing. You know, the pressure is off the players. Hopefully that won't make them just think, oh, it doesn't matter if we're rubbish. Yeah. Fine, let's be.
As if we haven't been in the past.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully they'll be able to, you know, pull a few shocks, and that pressure sort of, you know, will alleviate itself, and there we go.
I think that I really enjoyed the stuff that Hodgson's been saying around the Norway game. He said that because people were sort of talking about how England gave the ball away quite a lot,
yeah. Mm.
And he was saying, well, you know, it's natural for a new manager to come, and he said every time I was taken over at a new place, that happens because
literally
the players are anxious
them.
To impress the manager.
Yeah.
So he's talking quite sensibly about it.
But he did say, if that continues, though, we've got to source it out.
Yeah, and it is a chronic problem with England. That's the most worrying thing about the game. I mean, it wasn't a great performance in the second half. It was classic Sven, you know, first half good, second half not so good.
Yeah. Nobody had a good weekend, did they?
Well, really? This is the thing. It's a very strange round of games, because it's a group of friendlies that are played, you know, at the pace of friendlies, but are sort of given an extra sort of gravitas by people watching, because they think it's a precursor to what they're going to see in the Euros. And they're still played as friendlies with very much experimentation in mind. So we can't read too much into it. I mean, there were weird results everywhere, and really sloppy performances everywhere from teams that you wouldn't expect, which we'll come on to.
Absolutely, indeed. It's a good point, Jim. I think for England, though, these friendlies are very handy for the manager. I think for the likes of Germany, they're perhaps less important.
Handy for Hodgson, given that he's just come in, you know. I mean, Belgium will be a test, because they're a decent young team. Yeah. You know.
One thing I did notice, though, a couple of times, or a few times for England, they looked a bit dodgy from corners. They didn't have a man on the post once or twice, and I was a bit surprised, because Hodgson, with his set pieces and his organisation,
I'm not a huge fan of a man on the post. If I was a manager and I was defending their corner, I'd make sure if you're doing man marking, I'd make sure every player was picked up, and only then if I had spare would I put one on the post. Mm. I've heard people say, I can't remember which book it was, and I was reading. My memory's terrible for that sort of thing, but I've heard a
Da Vinci Code.
Yeah.
I remember you loved that. Yeah. You got really into that.
And Dan Brown said. He said, always mark the man first. Yeah. You know, it looks spectacular when a head is cleared off a line from a man on the post, but it doesn't happen that often.
Yeah.
It's much more important to get to the first, the source.
Wasn't it the secret footballer who was sort of saying that it wasn't
maybe.
Even that, it was just you wouldn't have a man on the back post, you'd have him a little bit in.
Yeah.
You'd have him on the line, but you wouldn't. Okay. And people would say, oh, why wasn't he on the post? Because most of them aren't headed from just under the bar next to the post anyway. They're usually in the middle somewhere.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, yeah.
You need to give your keeper a little bit of confidence, and also give him a bit of room to manoeuvre. You don't want too many players.
He nearly got caught out from the Reza corner, didn't he? Hit the post.
Yeah.
I thought, blimey, if that had gone in, Rob Green's confidence would have been rock bottom. But yeah. That boy.
Bloody boy.
Obviously, it'll be heart in goal unless injury. Well, we're talking of injuries, though. England are dropping like flies, aren't they? Gareth Barry's the latest one. He's out. Phil Jagielka has been promoted to the full side. And Jack Butland, of course, is in for John Ruddy, who broke a finger.
I think Jagielka coming in is a good thing, because it gives us, with him and Jones, you've got two players that can play anywhere there, and we're probably going to need that. Things always get shaken up.
And Jones can get moved into midfield.
Yeah, absolutely. Well. They can pretty much play across the back.
Some international Gurns.
Yeah, I was about to say. Yeah.
Some international class Gurns. I was thinking that I'm not that bothered about Barry, really. Barry goes not.
He wouldn't start anyway. He'd be the understudy to Scott Parker anyway. Yeah. So it's just a case of changing who that is. Yeah. And if anything, we're bringing in a player that's more versatile. So
if you're Michael Carrick, that, I mean,
but Michael Carrick decided he didn't want to play, did he? And I think that's just silly. Same with Ben Foster. I think it's the hubris at play.
Yeah, he's just gone with another striker, of course.
Can you remember World Cup 2010 when everyone was going, "Oh, we'll be alright when Barry comes back. We'll be fine. Don't worry about that."
Everyone was loving it.
Kieran Dyer in 2002.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, unbelievable.
God. We've been on the slide since the 90s, haven't we? Fucking hell.
Oh, dear.
Danny Mills at right back, eh?
Well,
yeah.
He did all right.
He's all right.
All
right,
yeah.
Apart from the first game against Sweden.
England's Rose. He was the one who got Ronaldinho sent off.
Well, Danny Mills?
Yeah.
All right, yeah. Trevor Sinclair on the wing, my goodness. Great stuff. Welbeck and Johnson look like they're okay, but do you think he'll go for Johnson or Jones at right back?
I think he'll go for Johnson because he's a more natural right back, I think, and he's got sort of more experience at that level.
Ribbery.
He's played for England for a lot. Yeah, no, but you could say the same with Jones, couldn't you? He's not really he won't have played. He's not just played that many games, really, Jones, has he? So I think Jones is there as utility. He's just defensive utility wherever that may end up being. So I think Johnson will definitely.
There's a lot of utility all over the pitch, isn't
there? Really is, yeah.
Everybody, it's total football.
It's a team of janitors.
Do you think it is?
I don't see how you can. I know he's the under 21 goalkeeper, but I don't see how you can pick Butland ahead of David Stockdale.
Well, no, I was surprised at that. I think
David Stockdale's been in squads before.
I think Stockdale's an excellent keeper.
I do as well.
Hodgson will have worked with him before, though, so maybe he doesn't fancy it.
No, fair enough.
Yeah, well. Gerrard looks as though he's going to be played next to Scott Parker. Yeah, yeah. He went in for a tasty one, didn't he?
Yeah.
On the Norwegian, I forget his name. And I just thought, Stephen, you're going to bloody.
Well, if he's getting out of his system now, then that's good.
I would
be playing Frank Lampard ahead of Gerrard personally. He runs around too much and he pulls the shape all over the shop and we'll get punished, particularly against France and Sweden and Ukraine.
Again, all the Liverpool players should be used as impact subs.
Yeah.
Because by and large, Gerrard's been coming on later in the season.
Do you think Hodgson's just doing that? He thinks if there's one group of supporters that could get me an early sacking. Just pick them all. I'll make you a captain.
I've done it before. I played him before, 1-1-0.
Yeah. Well, I was surprised he made Gerrard captain, to be honest, because Gerrard will start every game now.
Yeah, of course.
So,
well, that's his team. You've got to support him. That's what he's going for.
Formation's interesting. You know, I think we will be, you know, as we were saying, going to the 4-4-2, and it's been a while since England have played like that, and it's exciting, it's different, it's new. I'm looking forward to it, despite how sort of, you know, doom and gloom it all is when you look at the reality of it. I mean, that's the sort of beauty of international tournaments.
The sick pleasure of it.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah. Believe!
We know. 4-4-2.
Exactly. And you can't be knocked out on penalties in the group stage.
That's the main thing, yeah.
But it was nice to, when I was reading about England's first training session. I mean, this sounds so pathetic, you know, but when Hodgson, well, like Gary Neville was playing and he was kind of coaching Carroll.
Maybe he's not going to get
the wild day, you never know. But he was coaching Carroll through the training session, of course. And there was one moment, apparently, Carroll went up and scored a really good header and Hodgson was like, well done, son. You know, of English, you know.
I really like Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. He just seems like a really nice boy.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
And I hope he gets a go
because he's not been jaded by the media coverage and stuff. And one of the questions was, oh yeah, do you prefer playing out on the wing or do you prefer playing through the middle? And he said, well, wherever I'm picked, I'm just honoured to be there.
Yeah, it's so refreshing, isn't it?
Yeah.
We might even have 3 or 4 all right blokes in that squad. You know, Baines and Chamberlain and I'd say Jagielka was probably
the Terry offset.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, carbon footprint. Yeah. Yeah. You got to plant some trees.
Yeah. We've still got the big man to come back though, haven't we? Yeah. So we're going to be okay.
You do realise if you pick John Terry, you have to pick 5 players who are definitively good blokes. Yeah. I'll do it.
And with pace.
Yeah.
Whoever wins, it's nice to know that Terry will be there.
Yeah,
he's kicking up the trophy.
Yeah. And if we get knocked out, it'll be nice to know that Terry gets knocked out.
Terry's already typed up his CV. European Championship winner.
Dancing with the Germans.
Yeah.
Of course, we're off to Kiev, though, aren't we?
Yes, 12th of June for the Sweden game. Yeah.
Soon enough. I was going to say, anybody who's going out there, get yourself over to the Football Supporters Federation, the FSF, at fsf.org.uk/Euros. You can download an England fans guidebook to Poland and Ukraine and one thing or another. It really is worth it, actually. It could save you a lot of money.
And your life.
Yeah. Yeah. If Sol Campbell's to be believed.
Yeah
indeed. We did have some recent friendlies involving some of the other Euro 2012 hopefuls. And we'll start with France, England's first game. They were playing Iceland. Iceland went 2-0 up.
Some really sloppy defending from France.
But weirdly, they still look good at 2-0. They look like they could get that into it.
When you're
the defending was atrocious.
Patrice Evra. Just didn't fancy defending.
He really didn't.
Nah, leave him.
But they
it's
look
friendly,
like,
doesn't matter.
But they look like a team. I'm tipping them for, for the
for
big
something.
One. Just for something. Just simply because I think they'll score more goals than anybody else because they just didn't want to defend. They just went, oh, fuck it.
They are top heavy.
I think France have done, or whoever it is around the French camp's done a pretty good job downplaying their chances. They're unbeaten in 19 games. You know, they're in reasonable form coming into this.
Ben Arthur just sliding into the score quite easily. Yeah. Ben Arthur and Benzema, they hate each other. They used to hate each other. They're like, it's good to see
they're French.
Time is a healer. It's a sign of respect to hate someone.
It's that fiery Gallic temperament. Yeah.
Yeah. Football can unite all sorts of people.
Luckily, France managed to turn around.
Even 2 Frenchmen.
Yeah.
They're not the Dutch, though. You'd be a bit rest assured on that one.
France could turn it around because they had Adil the Terminator Rami playing for them.
Yeah, they did.
Him and Mexes. Has there been a tougher centre-back partnership for a long time?
I really like Mexes. I really do. I know he gets a few criticisms and whatnot, but I like him as a centre-back.
He needs to get rid of those cornrows.
He can do what he likes, pal.
Yeah, I think so.
He's bleached his hair and put cornrows in. When Andy Carroll put cornrows in, they had a pop at you, Pete. Remember that? Have a go at him back.
Not his dad, though, am I?
No, fair enough.
And the argument was won. I'd like to put forward the notion, I think I have done before, but I'm going to do it again. Iceland are one of the most overachieving nations in football.
What's that? For their size.
Country of 320,000.
And what's their ranking?
Don't know.
Yeah, I looked it through.
No, but I've just looked at some of their players. They've had players who've, you know, Gudjonsson played for Barcelona and Chelsea. You know, they've got the fellow who plays for Swansea, represented in the Bundesliga. It's 320,000.
Bjork was at Milan for a bit.
Yeah.
Stig Ross for a decent
small.
Side for a bit.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Scotland's no, small.
Yeah, 5 minutes. But anyway, back to France. France, they did go 2-0 down, and the crowd looked a bit, oh, bloody hell, what's this? And so by the
just
end of the
huge,
game,
huge shrug as one.
Well, nobody looked as though they were enjoying themselves. By the end of the game, when they won 3-2, everyone was on side. The players were enjoying it. I remember thinking, oh, yeah, they've got their tails up. Do you know what I mean?
That was Ribéry's first goal for France since April 2009.
Wow, it was a great goal as well. Really well taken.
He's got 7 goals in 57 games for France.
Wow.
It's just woeful. It's a woeful record.
For such a forward-thinking player.
Yeah.
It's a lovely French kit as well.
It is.
Oh, I do like
that. They always do alright kits, don't they? Remember the Laces one where they won it?
Yeah.
Decent.
Nice. Holland had a sloppy result at home to Bulgaria, losing 2-1.
Mm. Johnny Heitinger, what was he doing? Last minute, properly gave the ball away, like crossfield pass to the opposing winger.
What are you doing?
It was a real smash and grab job, though. The winner was in the 93rd minute, wasn't it?
Let's be honest, they'd left the window open.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
It was a lovely goal from Van Persie.
It was.
Schneider with a Barcelona-esque ball sort of chipped over the defence and Van Persie.
An Alex Song-esque
ball
over the top,
okay.
If you will.
They had loads of chances at Holland. They should have put it away, really.
Oh, they'll be fine, Luke.
Oh, they'll be fine.
Funny enough, Holland played a friendly against Bayern Munich only 3 days after the Champions League final. Did you hear about this?
Yeah, Bayern won 3-2, didn't they?
Bayern won 3-2 in front
of 30. That'll make everything all better.
Yeah,
but not brilliantly timed. It was only 33,000 watched. That's only if you think of the size of the stadium. The match happened because Arjen Robben aggravated an injury playing for Holland at the 2010 World Cup. After Bayern had told him not to play because he was already carrying a bit of an injury. So due to this aggravation, he missed several months of the Bundesliga season. And so the match served as compensation to the club and its fans.
Odd.
Strange. Very odd set of
sets
events.
A bit of a precedent.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Ferguson gets wind of that, they'll be in real trouble.
Surely that's no good to anyone at this stage of the season. Not good for club or country there.
Yeah. It would have been amazing if Robin got injured in that game.
Yeah.
I still remember there being a substantial payout when Owen injured himself, remember, for Newcastle.
He went for a stage of just playing for England and getting injured and
he
just
was the only team
in,
he was interested in playing for.
He'd come back just in time for another England game and get injured again. He was like he was on loan at Newcastle from England.
Mm. Yeah. Going back to the Dutch, you look at their forward line.
Yeah.
I've tipped Huntelaar to be top scorer.
But is Huntelaar going to play? That's the thing.
Yeah, I think he is.
I think if you force Huntelaar and Van Persie together.
No, he's top scorer in the qualifying. Huntelaar.
The other thing is they've got players like Baz Doss, plays for Heerenveen, who scored like 30 odd goals this season, and he's not even anywhere near the squad.
Yeah, they've got an incredible.
I think he's uncapped. They've got so many good forward players.
They've taken about 7 strikers, haven't they? Or 7 players that you could consider strikers. And also they've taken Ron Vlaar, who's just got a good name.
Yeah, damn right. That's how he got in there. The one thing I will say, I know they're slightly different players, but Huntelaar played very successfully with Luis Suarez. Ajax, who drops deeper and likes to play a lot like Van Persie does.
Yeah.
So, you know, it could work.
But then Schneider, would they step on his
toes?
Well, Van der Vaart as well. You know, there's a lot of players. There's a lot of players vying for that position just behind the main striker. That's their problem, isn't it?
Maybe they'll play like
I feel
that.
So sorry for them.
Speaking of amazing teams, did you ever see Scotland play the USA?
I was
up in the middle of the night and managed to catch the whole of that. Wow.
Landy Donovan with a hat-trick.
And a Dempsey-less USA as well.
Yeah. He was sat really up high. It looked like he was in the bit, you know, where they have like the announcer.
Yeah.
It looked like he was sat there talking to us.
Maybe he was. Yeah. I was on holiday, just come back today, but I was on holiday with a couple of guys from Glasgow, and we were getting the information through about the England friendly and the Scottish game. I don't know what the Scottish game. And they found it got like a bit of intermittent internet. And one of them went, what's the score? What was it? He went, oh, we lost 5-1. And the guy went, oh, at least, oh, fair enough, at least we scored one. Who scored that? Own goal.
It was
sympathy goal.
Yeah. They managed to get a little bit of a head of steam up, but yeah, no. Bradley's goal was a ping out. It was a beautiful goal.
I don't find it that difficult to get a bit of a head of steam up, though. It's actually converting that into results. Yeah.
Al Donovan's got 140 odd caps or something for America. Yeah. Incredible. Yeah. 49 goals as well he scored, I think.
For a decent USA side as well.
Not an out and out striker as well. Yeah. Well done to him. Another sloppy result for one of the championship favourites was Germany getting beat 5-3 by Switzerland.
I've got it in my head that Germany seemed to play Switzerland all the time before a tournament. It's like a good old
maybe they switch kits.
Good old confidence boost.
Well, not,
but
not
it's backfired. Yeah. Dirty Yok.
Yogi Love was just like, I'm not worried about it.
Do you boys remember Dirty Yok? It wasn't that long ago. Because Dirty Yok was a guy who almost scored that amazing goal against Spain. Mm. In World Cup 2010.
Yeah, when he did everybody.
He beat about four people, hit the post. Yeah. Switzerland won that game 1-0, as we all know. But a few months ago, Dirty Yok got a textbook injury. One of the funniest injuries ever. Playing for possibly Leverkusen. I think he's just signed for Hoffenheim, but I think he was at Leverkusen at the time. Mm. He was getting up, ready to go to a game, brushing his teeth, went to put the toothbrush back in the holder, knocked the holder off the sink, and it smashed. And he tripped on someone with a glass, and then was out for it.
Canazares esque.
Mr. Bean, it's amazing.
Stop walking on. Things I've walked on glass, and I've not managed to.
Remember when Canazares was at a bottle of aftershave, dropped his foot, and missed the World Cup.
Yeah. Mark Fish fell for a glass table, didn't they?
Amazing.
I never that would that could do.
But
bit.
With Dirty,
it could. But you just don't let it happen.
With Dirty, though, I love the fact that he's so dexterous with his as a professional athlete.
Yeah.
But he just turns into Mr. Bean around a toothbrush. Trending all this glass.
It smashes all around you. Yeah. It can't have smashed that much that you couldn't just step over it or step out of it or just get him out.
He just watched Bruce Willis and Die Hard. He had no option.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. But the Swiss did beat Germany 5-3. Some of the goals from Switzerland, set pieces, balls over the top, crosses, it looked very simple.
It's worth pointing out that Germany, they didn't have any Bayern players.
Mertesacker.
Who are the absolute spine of
was
the team.
Was Mertesacker playing?
He was,
yeah.
The caveats are Mertesacker's played first game back for a long time.
Yeah.
Ertzel was playing out of position, wasn't he? And he had no Bayern players. But I mean, they still scored three goals. Switzerland aren't a bad team.
Oh, they're decent, yeah.
The thing about Switzerland, they've got a lot of good players.
5-3.
Lichtsteiner, Inler, Dirty Yok. They've got decent players. The other thing is that it was
Shaqiri.
Funny to Shaqiri. He didn't play that.
No, he never played.
Watching the game, a friendly game before a big tournament. So what happened was, you got a team there who've not qualified. So in a way, this is a big game for them.
Yeah.
They're playing a big team. And it meant so much to them when they scored.
Right. Yeah.
When they scored the fifth one, their manager went absolutely postal. He's running up and down the touchline.
As he should do.
Friendly, though.
I was against Germany.
Well, you were having a go at Gerrard earlier.
Well, Gerrard?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was for fouling a player and nearly getting sent off.
Enthusiastic.
Yeah. Celebrating and fouling.
Patriotic,
not the same.
Marcus.
Not the same. Elsewhere, Spain, back to some routine stuff. They beat Serbia 2-0. Terrible dive from Adrian to win the penalty for Spain. Did you see it? He clipped his legs together.
Or good
practice
dive. Shall
again.
We look at it?
Yeah. See, this again, England, if you're listening, start cheating. We need it. I'm fully behind this campaign that I've started myself. So
all I've got to say is free Soldado.
That's a strange decision.
Soldado's been left out of the squad. Negredo is in. David De Gea didn't make it either. 19 out of the 23 went to South Africa have been included. Puyol and Villa are obviously out injured. Jesus Navas and Pedro are in.
Great for Pedro.
Yeah.
Had a tough season.
Problem with Spain is they've got a terrible midfield.
Yeah.
Iniesta, Xavi, Fabregas, Mata, Alonso, Busquets, Cazorla, Silva and Navas.
Just don't see where the goals come from.
there's not much tackling in there.
I just don't see where the pass statistics come from in that midfield.
Absolutely.
One thing I'll say for Soldado, though, he scored about 75 goals in his last three seasons. Not in two.
Who do you think Spain will go with that from? Do you think they'll go Llorente or Torres?
I think Llorente. Yeah.
Do you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
I wouldn't have taken Torres.
He's the in-form striker in that squad.
Jim, do you not think Torres is just a poor man's Llorente?
Well, I think he's maybe sort of become that. I mean, I've not sort of been keeping up with what Torres has been like for the national team, because obviously international managers put a lot of stock in that. You know, I think that explains Downing's inclusion to some degree as well for England. I think, maybe that is why he's there. But, Torres isn't as bad as his, statistics this season make out. And he's hinted towards the end of the season when he was, making noise about potentially leaving Chelsea that he wasn't happy with his role in the team. So clearly, he's having to play in a different sort of set of circumstances from what he's used to. So with Spain, he'll probably have a bit more freedom from that. And so, I would take him,
I'll tell you what, I'll roll.
Yeah.
That'd have been something.
Cool. The reason I'm asking that is because I was saying to Marcus on the way up here, at what point does a player become just a bad player?
Yeah.
Because
Torres
had low chances. He's played, I mean, if you think about it properly, he's been poor since about 3 months before World Cup 2010. He had a poor World Cup, and he's not been that great ever since.
He's injured largely in the World Cup.
There were injuries involved, of course, but that's part of any player's career. Yeah. And some of the best players have come back from injuries successfully.
He's had flashes of good form, but you wonder if they'll start to evaporate.
Yeah, I think sometimes people get into international squads because the national team manager just thinks, I reckon I can get something out of this.
Yeah.
More than the it's just it's a fundamental disagreement on what his role is in his club.
Or Del Bosque thinks, well, I've worked with Torres loads of times before, I know him. It's a bit more of a gamble.
Maybe Del Bosque thought to himself, who has pleasured Gary Neville like that?
He doesn't make that noise. He doesn't emit that sound readily, does he?
Yeah. Well, you know, Torres has had flashes of the old Torres we've seen for Chelsea. You just wonder, does he need to move? But a lot of it depends on who the sort of, you know, next boss coming into Chelsea is, you know, for what kind of role he's going to be playing. But it might also be the case that, you know, he broke into the sort of Atletico Madrid team when he was about 18, 19, played pretty much constantly from then on. He could just be burnt out.
All those great players, you could say that about, really.
It could just be that he's had his peak.
Do you remember?
Because he started a lot younger than a lot of people that go on to be at that level do.
Well, maybe.
Do you remember in the World Cup when, I know obviously Spain won it, but Torres wasn't playing that well, and every time Llorente came on for him, he looked so much better, but he still wouldn't start Llorente.
But Torres didn't start that much. I mean, he got an injury and he came on, didn't he, in the last few minutes of the final, something like that.
Yeah, okay.
But,
Spain have got a lot of quality, and they could be the first team to ever win three in a row.
I remember looking when, you know, Puyol and Villa obviously injured, and I remember thinking, oh, maybe there's a couple of names missing. And I, as you said, when you'd read out those names, I looked at the score and thought, bloody hell.
But Villa's, I think they've been resigned to Villa.
Exactly. They've played enough games without him, I mean, they've got enough quality. And, you know, Pedro again, where does he, you forget about Pedro.
You're not really going to play Pedro through the middle, though, are you? That's the thing. It's Llorente, Torres, or Negredo in those
Villa's
situations.
He's not often through the middle, is he? He's often just out on the left. They don't play anybody through the middle. You know, that's the thing about Spain. How do you line up against them? How do you mark them? How do you do this? They play slightly lopsided here. Iniesta's out wide, but he comes in. It's so difficult.
There's a reasonable chance we'll show you how it's not done in the second.
Exactly.
Check this out.
to try and set up, you know, against Spain and you know, do the tactics and all the rest of it. That's why Capello. You know, obviously there was a bit of slice of luck in there, but, you know, Capello just went, right, we're just going to have to sit deep and do this and do that, and I think that's it, isn't it?
And get luck of a set piece, which is
exactly. Basically, you've got to do exactly what Chelsea did against Barcelona. It's the same principle. There's no point trying to sort of, you know, take them on at their own game.
Yeah, you've got to risk Johan Cruyff's wrath.
Yeah.
You know, playing such a style. A little word on Serbia. Now, you remember Adem Ljajic, don't you?
Yeah.
Who got punched by now former Fiorentina coach Delia Rossi. He's not having a good end to the season, old Ljajic. Mihailovic, the Serbian coach, dropped him for refusing to sing the national anthem before the match.
It's fair to say Siniša Mihailovic is a very passionate man. Yes. And sometimes his passions boil over.
I think so. I think so. Just a few other results from the friendlies. Poland won, Slovakia 0. How do we rate Poland's chances?
Not highly. I mean, they're a decent side by their own sort of standard through history. I think, I mean, having, you know, Lewandowski is obviously a huge asset to them. I think he's going to be a key player. Yeah, they do have a good goalkeeper in Wojciech Szczesny. But I think it's just going to be too much for them. There's so much quality throughout the Euros.
But they've got a qualifiable group.
True,
they do.
Very true. And home advantage is absolutely massive. Hmm. They've got Russia, Greece and the Czech Republic, is that right?
They do. Poland v Russia, that's one of the ties of the first round for me.
That'd be good.
Spicy.
How many sendings off?
I actually think Republic of Ireland had a good result. Sort of slipped under the radar.
They did. They beat Bosnia 1-0.
Bosnia are an all right team.
Shane Long,
yeah,
with the goal, he could have a big tournament
for Ireland. For me, I was thinking about this the other day. Ireland's first game, right,
Croatia,
is against Croatia.
Big.
Now, if they win that, and it's a winnable game.
Yes.
If they win that, that gives them such momentum and such confidence. If they can pick up a draw.
Yeah. There's no guarantee what's going to happen elsewhere, because there's always a couple of bum results in that game, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I wanted to talk about Italy for a bit, because, I mean, we don't know what kind of, you know, Italian team will turn up. However, I think they could be the dark horses. Hmm. Again, like France. Hmm. They've played it down. No one's talking about Italy.
Prandelli's changed their style quite a lot as well. They're a lot more sort of free-flying and attacking now. This is basically the first time they've ever really done this, and it's working really well for them.
There's talk about them maybe trying a back three, and I thought, oh.
Well, yeah. James Horncastle wrote a really interesting piece about whether they'll do that or not.
That's where I read it. Thank you for reminding me.
A lot of teams in Serie A have experimented with it quite successfully, apparently, this season.
Yeah, well, Juventus did.
Yeah.
And they've obviously, and Juve have got about seven players in that Italian squad, you know.
And last time there was a bit of a corruption scandal, they won it. Yeah. Won the World Cup 2006.
And all over again, isn't it?
Indeed. I mean, you look at some of the, you know, they've got some decent midfielders. Daniel De Rossi, Nocerino for Milan's had a good season. Maggio. Thiago Motta.
Cassano's in there as well, isn't he, in the squad?
Oh, so good, Cassano's in the squad.
I'm loving Diamante being in there.
Yeah, I'm delighted with that.
Former West Ham man.
I was tweeted how pleased I was that he's in there because he's a classic number 10, and also because he's mad. And someone said that they saw him play for West Ham.
Yeah.
Someone tweeted me and he missed a penalty and tore his shirt in half.
Absolutely.
Love him.
I mean, they've got some wonderful forward players. You've got Balotelli, Di Natale and Cassano.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully Cassano will be up to speed. That's
well, a lot of these to be fair, a lot of these players won't want to go home to Italy. Won't go want to go back because they might be in trouble. So we want to stay in this tournament as long as possible.
This holiday last. Yeah.
Let's at least get third.
Italy are always dark horses. I don't think they've ever really been considered favourites. You know, even in '94 when they got
in '90 they were favourites. Well, joint favourites, and they.
Yeah, I suppose hosting it, but you know, generally they're always sort of seen as outsiders. But you can never ever write them off, and sometimes they'll be hilariously bad as well. I love Italy.
Yeah.
A lot of people seem to dislike them because they generally have quite a sort of negative style of play. But I love them.
They were pretty poor in the World Cup, weren't they?
They were, yeah. They were abysmal.
Jim, what about the Germans? Can you ever write the Germans off?
Can you, Jim?
Yeah, I'm doing it now.
You fool. That's the group, isn't it? Group B: Holland, Denmark, Germany, and Portugal.
See, yeah, what I find
bloody
frustrating,
delicious.
What I find frustrating about the fact that the Euros is going to 24 teams after this one is that you've got less chance of that sort of thing happening. All right, it's rubbish for Denmark. Oh, it's bad for everyone in it, but it's incredibly entertaining.
It's a shame for Denmark because they've got some good young players. Like the is it
Christian Eriksen?
Yeah, for Ajax was it?
The other thing is with this moving up to 24 teams, the reason the European Championship. I mean, everyone thinks you know, ostensibly the World Cup is the pinnacle.
Yes.
It's obviously from all over the world, 32 teams, it's the big dick.
Yep.
But when it actually happens, you get a lot of games that don't really mean much, a lot of dead rubbers. And then with the reason the Euros is so good as a tournament to watch, think about 2008, magnificent tournament.
Brilliant.
Because every game actually matters.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be 24 teams, 16 is absolutely fine.
And the quality's condensed almost.
Yeah.
It's just riddled with
quality.
It's already
filtered out in the qualifying, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So it's, sorted.
And that's going to go from now, which is rubbish. Sort it out.
Again, I'd sort of tap into what I said about Ireland. Holland, I think, have got a slight better chance than Portugal, because I think Germany will go through because they play Denmark first, and that's a bit of a chance to build a bit of momentum.
Pete, are Portugal going to go through, or are they going to go out?
No, I don't know. I can't see them getting.
I think Holland and Germany's got to be.
Yeah.
The Holland v Germany, it's the tie of the first round.
Yeah. Mm.
Without a doubt.
Absolutely.
It's funny, Portugal haven't really got any amazing strikers, and Italy
But they never
any.
Have, ever.
No, yeah.
But they've got great midfield players. Some of them.
But they always also flatter to deceive as well.
They do. Yeah. They're very much. Well, I don't want to say a cliched thing, but perhaps it's there for a reason. Cristiano Ronaldo's never really set the world on fire for Portugal.
There's only one man.
Yeah,
he can't do it all.
He's had some.
He's not even one man.
Yeah, that's it.
In international.
Well, now Deco's not. It was always Deco was their kind of main man for a while. Mm. And we'll see.
I think Charisma's still in there. He's only about 28. Feels like he's been there forever.
Mm. Yeah, Charisma. He's a bit of a fancy man, isn't he?
Mm.
I was going to say that I've had a few mumblings that people are putting money on Spain to get knocked out of the group stage.
Is that right?
Really?
Yeah, can't see that myself, but some people fancy a bit of that action.
Some people think England might as well. Group D, gentlemen.
Mm.
Ukraine, Sweden, France, and England. on paper, England have got their toughest game, of course, against France, straight off the bat.
It's good to get it out of the way first, I suppose.
Do you think?
Yeah, well, ideally we'd have Rooney for it. Or it would be third, so we had Rooney for it. But, you know, we've got to play him at some point, haven't we? So let's get it out of the way.
What about Hodgson's experience in Sweden? Because we traditionally haven't done too well against Sweden over the years.
No, well, we've only beaten them once in about 1,000 years, haven't we?
And that was
recently. Yeah.
Very recently, yeah.
And he's spent a lot of time there, Hodgson, so maybe that'll give us the sort of upper hand.
You'd hope so. You'd certainly hope so. Ukraine at home. To be honest, I think we should beat Ukraine.
Mm.
I think we've got a lot more quality. I know they're at home, but still.
But, well, they're the third game, so by then they could be out of it. What we don't want is them needing a win, effectively.
Is it just me that's just looking at that group going, oh, we could easily lose of those matches, like by a fair margin as well?
I was saying to people were saying Spain might go out in the group stage. England,
yeah,
of course.
England have got every chance of going out in the
group
stage.
I mean, we could. realistically lose to France and draw the other two games.
But I really think we could get put to the sword by France. Look at who they've got. It's just compared to what we've got in the back.
It's going to be back to the wall straight away, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, well, it is how he sets up. I mean, France have got some great attacking players, you know, with Ben Arthur, Benzema, and Ribery.
Nasri.
Just to name them. Yeah, well, there's a fourth. So we've got to be very careful. I think Hodgson will set us up quite cautiously and maybe try and hit them on a break, something like that. I think if he tries to match them, I think we'll lose.
Mm. Yeah, I think Ashley Young is going to be absolutely pivotal in that game because everything's going to be funneled through him. So it's just about getting him as much space as possible, really.
To dive in.
Yeah.
Very true.
I fancy him to dive over a Mavilla tackle and get us a pen.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll do like we did at the World Cup 2010. We'll write down some of our predictions, and then at the end of the tournament, we shall
laugh at ourselves.
Yes, we shall indeed. Now I have to say this. Now Ukraine's not known for its hot weather. However, they do have very hot summers. But you'll be pleased to know that if there are any rain clouds knocking around Ukraine, that the officials, they're planning to fire rockets to break up the rain clouds if the bad weather threatens to upset the matches. A government official said this on Monday, according to Reuters.
What's up with rain?
The official who decided not to give his name, funnily enough, perhaps probably because he's not official, said our missiles are prepared for dispersing rain clouds.
I don't see why rain's become a problem in football.
Yeah. Well, on the 9th of May, Ukraine celebrated World War II Victory Day, and they sent their air force up in an Antonov 30 cargo transporter to disperse a build-up of rain clouds by spraying it with chemicals. No rockets were fired.
I am a little concerned that we're going to a country that's claiming it's going to blow up clouds to
Whereas
make people
Qatar
comfortable,
Qatar
you know, for the sake of people's well-being.
Qatar
they're going to start blowing up
clouds.
Weather.
Qatar are going to make the clouds, aren't they, for them?
I think rain's fine at football.
Do you think?
You win the election, you go to jail, you rain on us, we blow you up.
Yeah.
That's the
official tagline for the tournament.
Well, we can look forward to that.
Didn't Paul McCartney do something similar?
The Frog Chorus?
No, didn't he have some? He was doing some concert in some exotic
climb. Oh, in Russia,
climb.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did something.
They
that's
hate
right.
clouds.
Yeah, you're right.
As long as they must hate rain clouds, but possibly not snow clouds.
But I can imagine going to an all-day festival and thinking, right, if it rains, it's going to be rubbish for everyone, so we'll stop it. But the football, come on. Some of the best games I've ever played have been in rain. Think of the Palermo.
Well, yeah. But it's going to be warm in Ukraine. It's
that was too much rain.
Very, very hot. Should we go to the FIFA house?
Oh, let's.
Yeah?
Is it in order?
It is in order.
Is it?
Well, according to FA chairman David Bernstein, it is. Now, this is the guy who last year said the FIFA presidential election should be called off after the bribery scandal and wasn't too impressed with FIFA. A year on, he's fine with them.
Yeah.
What did he say?
I don't know. As he drove off in his new Ferrari, he said, that is not true, of course.
With a suspicious black eye.
Yeah. Yeah, no, apparently he's all right about it. But I did like this coming from the FIFA house. International prosecutor Luis Moreno Ocampo. Now, you may know him from his work of pursuing war criminals. He's been nominated as chief investigator at FIFA to look at all the corruptions and so on.
How are they actually going to let him in, though? Or is it going to be like...
No, he's in. He's like the chief investigator.
They'll somehow corrupt him, though, won't they?
I don't know. He sounds like the uncorruptible.
They're all lizards. They're all lizards.
Yeah. Kevin Costner to play him in a film of his life. But all the big news, noises coming out of FIFA at the minute is, of course, SEP has called for an alternative to penalty shootouts. I did like how the Daily Mail spun this. You know, oh, we beat the Germans in a penalty and suddenly Sepp's going off about... Shut up.
You couldn't make it up.
Who's in that Chelsea side?
The man Christ. From the Ivory Coast scored the penalty.
There were some wonderful suggestions on Five Live a couple of days ago where I was going, what you should do is not have penalty shootouts, but you should have extra time and every 5 minutes you remove one player from each side.
That sounds like a good laugh.
It does sound like a good laugh, but it's no way to finish a tournament.
But what, a European Championship final should not end in a laugh?
Everyone just crying because of cramp and hamstrings.
What happens if it gets down to two goalkeepers?
You start playing clown music.
I quite like what Sepp said. He said, football can be a tragedy when you go to penalty kicks. Football should not go to 1-1. Perhaps Franz Beckenbauer with his Football Task Force 2014 group can show us a solution. Perhaps not today, but in the future.
Future admin. Future admin.
We're bored of doing admin now. Let's plan more admin.
Perhaps not today. Did he say this at 5 to 5?
Yeah. Yeah.
What's that coming over the hill? Something I'm putting off till tomorrow.
I often think this comes up, but no one ever comes up with a credible alternative.
Well, Beckenbauer wasn't having it.
Because it's tried and tested, that's why, Luke. Yeah. And it's exciting.
Exactly. Yeah. There's no such other drama you'll get. Yeah. Beckenbauer heads up this group who will recommend rule changes, and he responded by saying, penalty shootouts bring emotions into play and are a lot more attractive than the toss of a coin, for example.
The toss of a coin.
Well, see, what I find irritating about this argument is not people go, oh, it's a lottery. A penalty shootout's a lottery.
It's not.
It's a demonstrable skill.
Yeah, yeah.
No, they're footballers. They take penalties. Obviously, it's a high-pressure situation. Yes. The whole game is a high-pressure situation. It's the final of something, potentially, or something where you're going out at the end of it. Of course,
it's
pressure.
It's the rawest, truest form of football. You're Absolutely. Putting a ball past a goalkeeper into a net. Mm. It's, you know,
I have no problem with it. I have a problem with how bad England are at it, but, you know, that's...
I quite like the one-on-ones that they used to do in Nazzle.
And at half-time in the Premier League as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crossbar challenge. Yeah. Sorted out that way.
But there you have the stupid situation as happened for the to settle Nazzle once, where you can score a goal but like a second too late, so you don't win and it doesn't count. That seems far more unnatural to me.
Dizzy stick.
Yeah.
It's the only way. It's the only way. Elsewhere, coming out of the FIFA house, what have we got here? Oh, South Sudan gained its independence last year. It's become FIFA's 209th member. Good news for them.
He's already in the Dean Windass Hall of Fame.
There's going to
Zidane.
Be
Zidane.
There's going to be a woman in FIFA. Lydia Nsereka has become the first lady to sit on the FIFA Executive Committee at the annual Congress. She's the current president of the Burundi FA. I hope every time she sends Sepp an email...
She's going to have a good time, isn't she?
We're going to come out of the FIFA house and go to CONCACAF, where, in Sepp words, they've regained credibility after Jeffrey Webb of the Cayman Island FA was elected the new president. The previous president was Jack Warner.
Can we all just take a moment to think, just appreciate that he's gone now?
Sepp is saying they've regained credibility because Jack Warner's gone, but he's spent all his time defending Jack Warner. So now he's now saying that he wasn't credible.
Well, Webb...
The man who left to avoid bribery investigation.
Jeffrey Webb has said, you know, our past will never be repeated. We must move the clouds and allow the sunshine in. It's quite a Ukrainian problem.
Yeah. Indeed.
In my head, that's
we
just
must
like,
blitz the clouds.
In my head, that interview has just been taken of a bloke who's clearly Jack Warner in fake glasses and stuff. I am not him, I am Jeffrey Webb.
Flicking the V's.
He said, we must set our goals sky high. He's keen on the old
sky metaphor. Yeah.
Sky goals.
He said, we must say to Michel Platini in UEFA that CONCACAF will win the World Cup. We must say to President Blatter and the FIFA committee that the 2026 World Cup belongs to CONCACAF.
Maybe setting your goals sky high is a way of getting around the penalty thing. They just get higher and higher.
Whoever can kick it the highest wins.
Everyone can look at the sky at all the goals that are going in, and then you can take massive bongs on the ground.
They steal their possessions.
Rifle through their wallets. Hooray.
Look up there, it's our sky high goal. Thank you very much for your handbag.
Oh dear. Right, we're going to finish with the international stuff there, because we do have a few bits and pieces from club football to talk about, and it's the League One playoff final we're going to go straight to, where Huddersfield beat Sheffield United on an epic penalty shooter, 8-7, four of the first five penalties were missed.
It's a tragedy.
Yeah, nobody enjoyed that at all. Nobody will
talk
about
that. Should never go to 1-1.
4 out of the first 5 penalties missed, I think it was.
Bottled.
It was weird. Everyone was missing, and then everyone was scoring.
Yeah,
it was very much a penalty.
And then the keeper took one.
And then it went down to the keeper. I tell you what, though, one of the Sheffield United players who was, I think it was the 10th taker, top corner.
Get on that.
Hollywood.
A bit further down the list next time. Yeah. It went down to the goalkeepers, and Sheffield United's Steve Simonson missed the crucial one. It was just a shame because having saved so many and then missing his, you know, there's no one to save him. So
it's commentators who were a fan of saying, oh, the keeper's the only ones that like a penalty shootout because they can be the hero. Not that time.
No.
Indeed. In the League Two playoff final, Cheltenham lost to Crewe 2-0. Nick Powell scored a superb goal.
Yeah, I saw him interviewed after the game about that, and he went, I just whacked it. Yeah, I just belted it. I didn't really think about it. I love that honesty, and it's nice that Crewe have gone up, because they're all through sort of Derry O'Grady's academy, and they're all local boys that know each other really well, because they've come up through the youth ranks together. So that's just nice, isn't it? You don't really get that anymore.
Talk about replacing penalties with something more conducive to fairness. I mean, you're talking about the playoff system. What happens when, you know, a team maybe 16 points off you know, third or second space, they go up. I mean, how is that fair? There might be a better system for that as well.
What you're trying to say is that life isn't fair, is it?
Like, that's pretty much what I'm saying, yeah.
That's all football's a metaphor for.
Exactly.
For four.
Nick Powell's got a load of goals this season. Yeah. I think he's about 18, isn't he? He's got a player of the year, young player of the year, goal of the season, and he's got about 20, or not 20, maybe a few less than that from midfield. And I think there's talk that, it's like an open secret that he's signed for United.
Manchester United.
£4 million.
£4 mils. And the last game we're going to talk about from the world of club football this season is the Spanish Cup final. Barcelona, remember them?
Pep going out on a high.
3-0 against Athletic Bilbao. It was like the Barcelona of 3 months ago, wasn't it?
Bilbao have got to be gutted the way their season's ended.
It's a shame for Bilbao. I mean, obviously two cup finals and they've entertained a lot of people this season. Mm. They're trophyless.
I'm worried that they're going to lose a lot of their players and have to do that now, because there's talk of Bielsa being courted by Roma, isn't it?
Really?
So he could, I mean, the whole thing could be broken up. It's an amazing team. It's a shame they haven't won anything.
Yeah.
Coruña went up as well, didn't they?
Yep.
Deportivo, La Coruña.
Yeah. Cisco scoring the goal. Still on loan.
Is he really?
Still on loan. He's still on loan until 2013, I think.
Blimey.
Embarrassing. Wow.
Just signing.
Real Madrid's Castilla, or whatever they call them, got promoted as well.
Oh, the second team. Yeah. Into the Segunda, because they're in the third tier, weren't they? Yeah, okay, right.
Excellent stuff.
E-by-gon.
So if Real Madrid get relegated, then they'll have to go down as well.
Yeah. Mm. Or up. I'm not sure how it works. If they won the league. What would happen?
Just change the name. No, this is our first team now. It's up to us.
So how many trophies was that for Guardiola? Do we know? Is it 14, 15?
Quite a few.
I think it was 14.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. In what, 3 seasons?
He's bottled it, hasn't he?
That is.
Go on holiday, mate.
Yeah.
And now it's time for Going for Gold.
Going for Gold. It is time for Going for Gold, Marcus. I've got my clues already, so let's bang on, shall we?
Is it a Euro tournament special?
Yes. This man has played in the Euros.
First
so
clue.
Definitely
a
man.
Yeah, there's your first clue.
Stop.
Definitely a man.
Karol Pawłowski.
No.
Said man.
First clue. No, second clue. I suffered 3 broken legs at my first club.
Stop. Milan Baros.
No.
Oh, we're there, haven't we?
Yeah.
My middle name is Brian. I played 90 times for Aston Villa. I came on in the 2000 FA Cup final.
Stop. I think we've had him, but Savo Milosevic?
No.
You got to put it out there in this game.
Yeah.
I don't think he managed 90 times for Villa, did he?
I don't know.
He's in and out, wasn't he?
It was a punt, Pete.
Like his goal in the FA Cup final.
Link up.
I continued my legendary run of luck that I enjoyed at my first club by contracting MRSA at Leeds without kicking a ball.
Stumped.
He played in the Euros.
Eric Bakker. He made that move, didn't he?
No, I never played for Villa. I think, anyway.
He has played in the Euros, lads. Final clue.
Oh, no.
I was appointed Peter Beardsley's assistant in 2010. Imagine that. Having to learn. Look at that face every day.
What, Peter Beardsley's personal assistant?
Like a secretary.
Stop. Bosco Balaban.
No, not Bosco Balaban.
Go on.
Stumped.
Any more for any more?
No.
Stop. Enkelman.
Steve Stone.
Oh!
MRSA riddled Steve Stone.
I never. Oh, is that why his hair fell out?
I think that ship had sailed very, very early on in his career.
Steve Stone.
Pompey legend.
Yeah,
dangle the Pompey carrot in front of me. And I'll laugh at
I've been foreign. Waiting for Steve Stone as well.
I was thinking foreign all day long, I was.
Yeah, same.
See.
Oh, Leeds, I don't remember him going. Well,
no, I don't.
Why would I? If he'd never played. Well done, Petey, well done. Right, let's have an email.
Thank you for your
email,
lady.
Let's. Ramblers.
Hello.
I'm in the process of going through your backlog.
Ooh.
Back catalogue, most people would call it. Makes it sound like he's just pretty grudgingly listening to old shows.
Are you my cleaner?
Yeah, Pete did say he had someone weird in the flat the other day.
I'm going through your backlog, and I'm currently up to Mike Ashley, Space Criminal, released at the tail end of 2010. One of the things to amuse me from this episode was Pete's outburst with regards to the sacking of Chris Hughton as he belted, "Who have we got coming in? O'Neill? Pardew? Pardew? Don't make me sick in my mouth."
Every single time Newcastle United win a football match, I get that tweeted to me, email that to me. Skywriters.
Sorry about that.
Isn't retrospect lovely? I digress to the subject of my email.
Is this an email for someone not being able to predict the future?
No, that's just a dig
at
Pete.
Did you see Pardew's career before he came to Newcastle United?
It's not even the email. It's just a dig.
Just a dig.
So I digress to the subject of my email.
Sunderland fans? Sunderland fans.
I'll go through your backlog, mate. Fist City, brother.
I noticed the BBC quickly, running a story on Blackburn's Morten Gamst Pedersen's determination to stay at the club following their recent relegation. The story cites Pedersen's official minimalistic and Apple-esque website, gamster.co.uk. For reasons yet to be understood, I took to the contact section of the page. This seems pretty standard, but then has a drop-down box asking, "Who are you?" The standard options are there: press, fan, business, general praise. Okay, that last one is a bit self-indulgent. But the most interesting of all is left till last. "Who are you?" can be answered with Swedish royal princess. Cheers, Patrick McClellan.
That's class.
Mm. It's a bit optimistic from Pedersen. Yeah, isn't it? Yeah.
Are we getting that box in hours?
Yeah. If you don't ask, you don't get, I suppose.
Goodness me. And now it's profile time.
Hooray.
Yay.
Yes, sir.
Let's all have a profile.
No. Right, the Demon is a Hall of Fame. Of course, it is in association with kitbag.com. And what have we got this week? The last one of the season.
Indeed.
Last profile of the season. It's Euro 96, ladies and gentlemen.
It didn't come home.
I warn you, I might cry during this. I get very emotional about Euro 96.
No, it did come home and it went away again.
Oh, yeah, Germany. Germany took it.
Yeah.
They took it away forever.
Sorry to spoil the ending. Nobody knew.
Spoiler alert. Put a spoiler alert in there.
The tournament began on the 8th of June 1996.
You know that ITV advert when Southgate puts the goal in?
1996?
29 years after the summer of life.
Thank you. Yeah. Never interrupt that.
That might be the latest one we've ever had.
Could be.
Yeah.
Is. It was the first European Championship to use the abbreviated Euro name.
Mm. Oh, nice little factoid to start with.
The first European...
That's what it'll be remembered for.
Somebody reread a corporate website.
The first European Championship that had 16 teams competing.
Mm. Remember the logo looked like an obese man fleeing a big football. It's weird. Look back at it again. It's very odd.
Oddly representative of...
Which, strangely, was what Gascoigne did in the trial against Germany.
Seem to remember the video game was a rebadging of the actual soccer series. Oh, it was very good, as I recall.
They've rebadged it, you fool.
There we go.
Synchronised.
Synchronised partridge.
There were six teams making their first appearances at the championships, including Bulgaria, Switzerland, Turkey, Croatia, Czech Republic and Russia. Now, the latter three, technically speaking, of course, since the breakup of their former nations. Mm. England were the hosts, which was probably just as well as we might not have qualified. we were in a bit of an old slump, where England, having failed to qualify for USA 94 and being rather unimpressive in the Umbro Cup played the previous summer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, God.
If the truth be told, I think this tournament helped England get a bit of pride back into the national
God,
team. Because after the success of Italia 90, obviously you had a bad European Championships at Sweden in 92, a big failure not qualifying for the World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, the Sweden 92 is almost just like the thing you don't talk about as an England fan. Yeah. It's held in no regard at all. It's completely swept under the rug.
And the Championships of 88.
I think for Euro 96, beforehand, people had mistaken our speciality as just being failure. When everyone knows it's glorious failure.
Mm. Yeah.
And Euro 96 restored that for us.
Yeah, I agree.
A bit more of a glorious failure.
Yeah, it wasn't a fizzle, it was like a boom.
Boom, yeah.
Mm. I mean, the English team was a bit out of sorts, and for a time, David Platt seemed to be our only decent player. And he was a good player, David Platt.
Yeah. Mm.
But apart from him, you know, there was no real stars in that team. You know,
Shearer had a bad injury and a really poor year in 95.
Scored didn't a goal he? For years yeah, for England. Right. You know, Teddy Sheringham was yet to come into his own. There was all this sort of stuff going on. The opening match of the tournament took place at Wembley between England and Switzerland. Hodgson, of course, was in charge for Switzerland in their qualification campaign, but had resigned before the tournament. Portugueseman Arthur George, or Jorge probably, took over. So El Tel, Terry Venables, pitched his wits against him. And England were in a Group A with Scotland, Holland and Switzerland. In the first game, it was a sunny Wembley, packed stadium, the old Wembley. And Shearer scored, didn't he?
Yeah. He scored a penalty, didn't he?
It wasn't a penalty. He was slipped through by Paul Ince.
And he just opened up, he did that wonderful answering goal, and just opens up his body and just rifles.
Yeah, there's only one place it's going.
See, Shearer back then, despite the fact he had some travails in the England team, he was, much like Gary Lineker was at the World Cup, he was the player where you knew he'd score. Things would be all right because you had Shearer. Yes. You know, that's what I remember thinking when I was...
Alan Shearer was just, you know, just something else. He was just, especially in the tournaments, that was.
In the tournament, but he hadn't done it previously. England were worried that...
It was Switzerland who scored a penalty, wasn't it? Not England.
Turkey, man.
I can remember it being, because I was about 15 at the time, and because we were hosting it, and obviously we had Big Des Lynam on the telly, it was a whole party. And when Turkey Man scored that penalty, it was almost like someone had walked into that party, turned the music off, and said, "Right, everyone home."
Yeah, Turkey Man nearly scored before that, as I recall it. It was just headed off the line, as I recall. That game for me was fantastic because people like Steve McManaman just sort of went, "I'm going to go fund some mazy dribbles," and it was like, it was brilliant. Yeah. Gascoigne did this amazing trick where he did that. He kicked with his standing, instead of he planted the wrong foot and kicked with the odd foot and just.
Is that a Rabona? Do you call that Rabona?
No, Rabona's when he did behind the other foot.
Yeah, that's what he did.
Yeah, Rabona. Okay, yeah, he did a Rabona for Steve McManaman to run on, and oh man.
Well, England went 1-0.
An England player doing a successful Rabona.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, Euro 96.
It did happen. It did actually happen.
But it's true. England, I mean, for the first sort of 20 odd minutes or whatever it was, and Shearer scored, it was kind of like, we're back.
Yeah.
You know,
it was.
We had a bit of a swagger to ourselves.
And then the second half happened.
There was a bit of a dampener because England thought we were.
Massive dampener.
Because we were thinking Scotland is a pick 'em because Scotland are our rivals and Holland.
And Holland.
Holland
are decent. Yeah, so Switzerland got a good point. And. You know, we thought, as you say, bollocks, you know, we were in a bit of trouble here. Scotland got a great point against Holland. So it was all square going into the second batch of matches. And Holland beat Switzerland 2-0. Jordi Cruyff.
Yeah, I remember him.
Scoring and big Dennis.
We hardly knew ye. Played for Alaves, who lost to Liverpool 5-4.
That's right.
Played for Man United.
Played for Man United. I saw a Jordi Cruyff score for Man United at Wimbledon. Collector's item, I think.
A tennis tournament.
His career went really weird.
And then came the game, Scotland against England. Scotland in the home dressing room, of course. 0-0 at half time, bit of a stalemate. And then an inspired substitution. Jamie Redknapp literally changed the game.
He did, yeah.
We can't.
I'm literally playing midfield, Rude.
It's hard with Redknapp. He was quite a
Redknapp
player.
Was a very, very good player. Yeah, let's not forget this just because he's a bit of a dope.
He was a very, very good passer of the ball, a good midfield football player. Definitely.
He could hit a dead ball as well. He came on, I think, for Stuart Pearce.
Is that right?
So I think they went for a back three.
What about the Uri Geller?
Well, actually, he was the real hero. But of course, Shearer scored to make it 1-0.
That's what he
header,
did.
Wasn't it?
It was a header. Yeah. I think Gary Neville
crossed it in. I think Steve McManaman passed it to him.
Yeah. Do you know one of our best crossers of the ball in that tournament was Alan Shearer himself, when he just found himself out on the side. He was whipping them in like you wouldn't believe it.
Stop talking about Shearer.
He wasn't playing for Newcastle then.
At the end of this profile, he's going to dub over. Alan Shearer, though.
We had Steve Howie and we had Les Fern. And we didn't see piss all of them.
England went 1-0 up, and then I remember Teddy Sheringham missing a close range header that Gorham saved very well. And I remember thinking, you bloody idiot, you should have put that away.
Yeah. He was like fat bugger at the time, Gorham, wasn't he?
He's a great keeper.
He was a fantastic keeper, but
magnificent keeper, Gorham.
He was no figure of a footballer.
My goodness, was he a good keeper. And then was it Gordon Dewey had a header that Seaman clawed?
Gordon Dewey, ladies and gentlemen.
Seaman clawed out.
Head bandaged up.
Yeah, and he won a penalty.
Tony Adams took him over. And then Uri Geller stepped in, didn't he?
And then
he went off on a stretcher, didn't he? I thought that was over because he was just lying on the ground. There was just blood pumping out of his head. It was like, oh God.
Ali McCoist was thrown on. Okay. And then Gary McAllister stepped up for the penalty. And Uri Geller apparently
made the ball move.
Yeah, I mean, if the people don't know Uri Geller, maybe listeners overseas.
Charlatan.
A man who's basically made a living out of pretending that he can bend spoons with his mind and befriending Michael Jackson.
I'd say so. That well summed up quite nicely.
That's what his Wikipedia page says, isn't he?
He was, what was he, in a hot air balloon over the stadium?
That's right,
something.
Yeah.
As if that's true.
Powered by his own sense of self. Because we all know hot air rises.
And I don't know why, he's Turkish, isn't he? But he really wanted England to win for some reason.
England win, I remember him doing that.
And, and, and he he tricked Gary McAllister into putting the ball where Seaman would want it. And,
no, because the ball actually moved, didn't it, on the spot? That was the big thing.
Oh, of course.
If you see the slow motion close up replay of the ball on the penalty spot,
ever so slightly,
it moves as McAllister hits it.
Yeah, that's
technically
right.
Technically, it should have been a re-spot.
Yeah.
But it wasn't Marcus.
And David Seaman made the save.
Hero.
But it was quite funny because he made the save and everyone wanted to go crazy, but there was still a corner to defend, and he's like, well, all right, come on.
But that was the moment where the euphoria properly kicked in. It was like, oh, come on,
When Seaman saves penalties, his hair would do that sort of wobbly thing, and it would look like the ball was the aggressor rather than, you know, he got
God! See, what I thought was great about that moment and that team as well was that suddenly you believed in England, really, from that, because you felt that there was strength throughout the team. And looking back at it, it was a really balanced side. They played with a diamond formation. You had Paul Ince holding, you had McManaman on the left, and who was it starting
Darren
on the right?
Anderson.
Darren Anderson on the right, and obviously the SAS up front.
Well, Gascoigne.
And Paul Gascoigne behind. It was just
Steve Stone, left back at times, would sort of mash up that wing. And you forget how quick he was for a bald man. You're like, you shouldn't be that fast.
But then, anyway, we can't forget that straight after McAllister. I felt a bit sorry for McAllister because he'd been such a great player for Scotland. Well, I didn't feel that sorry because I wanted him to miss it, but an Englishman. But do you know what I mean, though? It was a shame for him, a big shame. And then Seaman puts the ball up the other end.
Gascoigne taps it in.
And Gascoigne flicks the ball over
Scruffy
Colin
one.
Hendry and smashes it past Gorham. I remember Gorham saying before the tournament, because Gazza was at Rangers at the time, saying, we've all been given Gazza plenty you know, before the game, and he said he better not do something good in that match because he will go on and on and on about it. So I hate to think
God.
Gazza scored and then did the old dentist chair celebration.
There's a clip on YouTube of the top 10 Euro 96 goals uploaded by someone with a suspiciously Scottish sounding name. No Gascoigne. Not the amount of top 10 as far as he's concerned.
One of the greatest England moments ever. Absolutely brilliant. I've actually written a piece about this game for our website, so check that out when it pops up at some point.
And England won 2-0. I think that Redknapp, obviously he was a sub, he came on at the start of the second half. I think he came off right towards the end.
Well, he did get injured quite a lot, so
I think he did, and I think Sol Campbell came on. Sol Campbell definitely featured
Big
in self. That game.
Sub for a sub.
At the end, yeah. But that obviously wasn't because of a bad performance, because he was excellent. But then we went into the last set of matches in Group A.
There were other groups, but...
We will come to, don't worry. Of course we're going to over-egg it with England, but... Scotland versus Switzerland and Holland versus England. Now, I was...
18th of June, Jim Campbell's 15th birthday.
Yeah, that's him. I was living in Scotland at the time, and of course, being English, you know, believe it or not, you do get a little bit of stick for that, especially with the old football.
That's just being you, Marcus. Come on now.
Yeah, maybe.
Sometimes the colonies just do not appreciate what we've done for them.
Enough. But it was... That evening's football action, I actually didn't watch the England game live because the Scotland game was on. It was a particularly beautiful moment for me for the fact that Scotland wanted England to win. I know why they wanted England to win, because they needed them to do a favour. Mm. But when Scotland scored to make it 1-0, McCoy scored a beauty, and England were 1-0 up, and then of course England, another goal went in and we were all celebrating. There was a moment where I was with all my Scottish mates and we were all jumping up and down in perfect harmony, Jim.
And then Clive popped
up. It's one of the most beautiful moments of my supportership in football, until Patrick Clive ruined it. And I patted them on the back and said, oh well, at least we went through. You've got any consolation in that? And it didn't seem to be.
I can imagine you back then, because you were probably wearing the same clothes, if you don't mind.
Oh!
Boom.
Just a dig, isn't it?
These are Wranglers. It was an incredible England performance, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's overplayed slightly because Holland were in a bit of disarray, weren't they?
They were.
They had all sorts of dissension in the camp.
Oh, but England were rampant, though.
But England were very good, yeah.
Shearer and Sheringham up front were just tearing them chunks out of them. It was
brilliant to watch. Shearer, it's four.
Yeah.
Let's forget Barry Davis was commentating this tournament.
Gascoigne sort of toe-pocketed it through to Sheringham. Sheringham by all rights, should have shot, laying it. He arms the body. It flies in. But like, it'll start with like Paul Ince doing an amazing bit of skill and Danny Blint knocking him over. Do you know what I mean?
That was for the penalty.
I think he'd over sort of stepped it a little bit and he thought, oh, I'm going down.
But Holland went through at the expense of Scotland, not on head to head, which is how they did it, not even on goal difference, on the number of goals scored. An absolute sickener for them. It was a real shame. We've done enough on Group A. We've got to go to do the other groups, otherwise we'll never get through this. Group B was France, Spain, Bulgaria and Romania. And Spain had a decent side, although not as quite as good now. But you remember Alfonso with the white boots? I think the Real Betis player,
which was a real sort of like, you know,
a big thing,
dick then. Move back then, wasn't it? Wearing white boots, it was a real flash thing.
Yeah, and Stoichkov was playing for Bulgaria.
Scored a lovely free kick against France. Yeah. Stoichkov,
he did indeed. France had the likes of Dugarry, who scored the winner against Romania. Djorkaeff, love Djorkaeff.
Very young Zidane in there as well.
Yeah, Zidane was in there. Yeah, absolutely. And Spain, Caminero, he was amongst the scorers. And there was, it went down to, Romania went out early. I think they may have been the first team eliminated from the tournament. And then and France were,
because they lost their first two games, didn't they? So as soon as there's two in that group, you're out.
Yeah, you were gone. France, I think, France went through after two games. And Patrice Loco on the score sheet. And it went down
that's
to
like being called Pat Crazy.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I suppose it is.
And like Juan Mata is Mato in Spanish is Kills, so his name's John Kills. It's a good name, isn't it? Johnny Kills.
And then Amor for Spain as well. Love.
Remember him. Remember Amor.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Barcelona player, wasn't he? Yeah. Now he scored a vital one. It was France beat Bulgaria. And Spain needed to beat Romania, and I think he scored a diving header with 5 minutes left to put them through. And so
through to the ignominy of facing England.
Spain and France went through. It was a shame for Bulgaria because, of course, in 94 they'd wowed us and to go out. But Stoichkov, he was,
Romania weren't too shabby then, really.
Yeah, Radichoyu, who went to play for West Ham.
Yeah,
he was there. Group C: Germany, Czech Republic, Italy, and Russia. I mean, it was a foregone conclusion the Germans and the Italians were going to go through. Mm. Germany kicked us off 2-0 against the Czech Republic. Who would have thought that they would play each other later on, eh, Petey? Ziga and Muller. Germany playing with wing-backs and big Matthias Sammer as a sweeper.
Wasn't he the player of the tournament?
He was.
Crazy, isn't it? Sweeper. It's a fantastic
player. The best game of arguably the entire tournament was Russia-Czech Republic.
It was. Well, this is when Italy had beaten Russia, and then came the biggest upset of the first round. Czech Republic beat Italy 2-1. Hmm. Nedved scored, Chiesa had scored. And people were like, hang on a minute, what's happening here?
Italy had some good strikers in that tournament as well. They really underperformed there.
Casiraghi. Signori would have been there, wouldn't he?
No, it wasn't. It was Casiraghi, Chiesa, Ravanelli, Zola and Del Piero.
Was Baggio injured? Wasn't he in the running for it? And he was injured.
I think he would have been.
And did Dino Baggio play instead?
Maybe he'd gone.
Not instead, but
yeah,
it was the Baggio contingent.
Germany beat Russia 3-0. And Klinsmann scored one of the goals of the tournament when he just knocked it past the defender. And from just outside the edge of the box, when he should be hitting him with his left across the keeper, outside of his right into the top corner. Delicious.
Outrageous.
Yeah, indeed. And then in the last couple of games, Italy were playing Germany, I think at Old Trafford, and this was the game, Luke, Russia playing Czech Republic. Now, Italy, Zola missed a penalty. Andreas Kopka saved from him. Mm. And Italy, therefore, it was 0-0, and it went down to what would happen with Russia and the Czech Republic, because Czech Republic would then beat Italy if they finished on the same points on the head-to-head. And Czech Republic went 2-0 up, and then Russia pegged them back 3-2. Remember Bezcajnic with the third? Mm. Absolute peach from about 25 yards into the top corner. And so Italy were good, and then 2 minutes to go, big Vladimir Schmitza steps up and volleys home and makes it 3-3.
But the goal of that game was the Czech Republic goal, Kuka scored a header.
Oh, the header.
The ball from Yuri Nemec from like the left back position is about, I'm not exaggerating, it's about a 60 yard raking pass right on his head at full pelt running, and he headed it into the top corner.
Looped it over the keeper.
It's one of the best passes I've ever seen. Mm. It's incredible. Really was incredible. It's worth checking out.
Yeah,
because Nemec was playing for Schalke at the time. Right. He was like a decent underrated player.
Yeah, you
know?
Yeah.
Sort of wide. Well,
all those Czech Republic players were. None of us.
They're a bit of an unknown quantity, weren't they? Because I mean, this is still when the internet was very sort of
absolutely
quite rare that people had it. And
we didn't know a lot about these teams. And
all you'd know is when you get up, you get your 4-4-2 or your World Soccer preview pack, and you read in there. You know,
that's right. Well, the thought of Italy going out in the first round was unbelievable. They'd forget the final of the World Cup 2 years previously. You know?
I think Euro 96 is the reason that people always back the Czech Republic as a dark horse now. It's almost like people are contractually obliged to do that.
They're nowhere near as good as they were then. That's why a while back when Scotland set up really negatively against them, it was almost like Levine had had used had thought, well, they must be decent because they got to the final Euro 96. Like, yeah, they're not that good anymore. They're not any good players. You know.
Yeah. Well, in Group D, there was a couple of teams who, again, not many of us knew about, but Portugal and Croatia specifically. Obviously, Denmark and the holders and Turkey were in there, but Portugal and Croatia became dark horses quite quickly, didn't they?
Yeah.
We
did.
Croatia were quite impressive qualifying, and Portugal we knew had some good players, but you just hadn't seen those teams before, really.
That was the start of the Portuguese sort of golden generation.
It was. Well, that was Croatia were very new then, weren't they, as a football team?
Yeah.
You know, well, and a nation.
So. Yeah, that was 2 years before World Cup 98. Mm. When they had their finest moments. So
Davor Suka scored one of the goals of the tournament as well. Oh. Lobbing Peter Schmeichel whilst he'd been out for a corner.
Boban scored in that game.
Scoop
well.
Lag all that.
Yeah. Yeah. Big Brian Adams scored a good one against Portugal, I remember.
He did. Vlahovic scored a lovely one against Turkey.
He was a good player.
That was at the City Ground, not in Forest Ground, I think. Yeah, a rainy night there.
It was, yeah.
Lovely run from his own half.
Didn't Karol Poborski score a scooped goal as well?
Oh, you're getting ahead of yourself.
Come on.
You're getting ahead of yourself, Jimmy.
All right.
In the last set of games in this group, it was interesting because Croatia just thought, yeah, we're through, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And Portugal were like, thanks. And Figo scored in a 3-0 win, so they went through top. Denmark won 3-2 against Turkey with Laudrup getting a couple of goals, and Allan Nielsen,
The
former Spurs player, scored as well. But it was Portugal and Croatia went through. And they were two of the teams that people were talking about because they thought, blimey, they can play a bit. And we haven't really seen them before. Denmark holders went out. So we move on to the quarterfinals where England won a penalty shootout against Spain.
Staggering. And Spain had a couple of goals disallowed as well, didn't they? We rode our luck.
One of them was definitely ruled out wrongly for offside. And it was a funny game, wasn't it? Because I think off the back of the 4-1 and the 2-0 against Scotland, everyone just thought, oh yeah, we'll do the Spanish, no bother.
Yeah.
And it was a bit of a reality check. Them. Yeah, it was, and also it was an afternoon game at Wembley, which was a bit weird because you're normally used to seeing England in these sort of under the lights.
Wasn't there a stinking foul where they should have had a penalty
for England?
Yeah, and they got a yellow card for diving.
I think it might have been Steve Stone, was it?
Could have been. Somebody put in a bit of a stuck a leg out basically, and they should have had a penalty, and it was just embarrassing.
Barry Davies said Spain should have got a penalty.
Yeah, Spain should have got.
Oh,
a penalty.
I see.
And
they had a couple of shouts, didn't they? As well.
And Barry Davies said that's the best free kick England will ever win. It was Ron Atkinson in co-commentator mode.
Yeah, before his accident.
His racist accident.
Let's look at it. England underestimating Spain and winning anyway.
On penalties.
Oh, the past.
What a concoction.
Could happen as well. Could happen in this year's quarter final.
And let us remind ourselves of a couple of moments from that penalty shootout. Hierro missed, and then Shearer scored. Platt scored, and then Pearce scored.
He almost exploded, Stuart Pearce. Mm.
Oh, what a penalty!
He nearly, very nearly threw up a lion.
He did, yeah.
Pearce scored, and of course, smashed it in and went loopy. And then Belsway, the Spanish fullback, scored, to which Barry, he just sort of just touched it in. Because everyone thought, Pearce has scored. Seaman's going to. And then Barry Davies, oh, what a contrast to the previous penalty.
Oh, God, I love it.
And then Gazza scored, Nadal hit the bar, and we went through. And then again, I just think it was a moment of, we've won a penalty shootout. This tournament's ours, surely.
Yeah. I remember where I was, at Church Street, Hartlepool. People were jumping on cars. Chucking bottles around.
Oh, yeah, it really did feel like the penalty sort of hoodoo was over, didn't it? It felt like we'd ourselves and Stuart Pearce, and maybe actually Pearce's reaction was why we all felt like that. But it did feel like some sort of curse had been broken.
Right. So I can remember when they show the camera of the group of players and they're sorting out who's taking the penalties after extra time. You can see Stuart Pearce going, "I'm taking one. I'm taking one."
Venable said he came up to him and said, "I'm number three."
Did he? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
And then the other quarterfinals, France drew 0-0 with Holland, and France won 5-4 on pens. And it was Clarence Seedorf who missed the only spot.
No. Quite a large proportion of the knockout games went to penalties.
They did.
Yeah, it was actually, I mean, we remember it as being this brilliant tournament because England did so well comparatively, but it was very, quite negative actually, wasn't it, in the knockout stages? Mm.
Germany beat Croatia 2-1, and I think a lot of people thought, oh, Croatia up against a slightly ageing German side, they're going to do it, you know. Mm. They did 2 years later. But
because they'd aged more.
Yeah, that's right. Klinsmann put Germany 1-0 up, and then Davos Suker scored a lovely one, rounding Andreas Kucher in goal. He kind of
was a great dragon fight over the ball.
Yeah, it was beautiful, wasn't it?
Such a
proper roll.
That was like the sheer goal to do that.
Because everyone goes off and on about his chip, but that was a beauty.
Yeah,
because he dragged his foot over and just see you later.
The kick was nowhere after that. It was just kind of like, oh god.
Yeah. But the sheer confidence to do that in such a big game,
and it wasn't really his. It didn't look like his ball immediately. To take on, it was another foot. It was the other strikers. I can't remember who the hell it
Flavich,
was. Now.
Was it maybe?
Could have been, yeah. But and he just took it on and just went, and having the cockiness to do that.
Yeah,
it's the sort of thing you playing FIFA. You'd go, oh, I can't believe I've done that. It's such a knob.
And then Mateusz Sammer wasn't having any of it. Went up the other end and made it 2-1 and got the winner. And then the interesting game was Czech Republic versus Portugal. I for one, and I think a lot of people did, thought, well, Portugal go through. Czech Republic, all right, you've been lucky. You got a last minute goal.
Down.
Fair enough. Portugal, as I say, were off to some people's dark horses, but Karol Popolski scored that famous scooping lob, Jim.
Oh, absolutely.
You're a big fan.
Love. Because it went so high.
It did. Yeah. It cleared the bar.
Ridiculous way to score a goal. absolutely outrageous.
And what people don't remember is he sort of lost the ball before
he did.
That, and he bundled his way back through, and he was like, oh, I might as well. I've made this myself.
Villa Park have never had it so good.
He had no right to do that. That got him his move.
Yeah, pretty much.
He went to United afterwards, didn't he? Yeah.
If you do well at Villa Park, then back then you'd have got a move to United, because it'll inevitably come in handy in an FA Cup semi-final.
Yeah. Schmeichel already got chipped in the same tournament. He'd be like, I'm not having him, Johnny.
No, get him on side. That's probably the best thing to do.
Not training with him, though.
Keep your scoopies close and your scooper. Oh, shut up.
So, into the semi-finals we go, and France played the Czech Republic, and again everyone thought, right, Czech Republic, you're playing a proper side now.
You've had your
fun.
Yeah. Well, they hadn't. They beat them 6-5 on penalties, and people couldn't believe that the Czech Republic had got to the final. And I remember actually the penalty shootout. It was 5-5, and they hadn't decided who was going to take when it went into sudden death. And I forget who it was.
Not Pavorsky, he'll scoop it. No.
Yeah. But one of the big men was like, it came to the moment where it was like, this is to win the game. And he was like, all right, I'll have it then. Top corner. See you later. Well, he's certainly in the corner.
I suppose he'd not had time to psych himself up.
Yeah, maybe that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
Well, for some. But they went through incredibly. And then we move on to the second semi-final. Where England drew 1-1.
Paulis did a really good volley at one point.
Yeah. After two minutes, England were ahead. It was too good to be true.
Yeah, and there was a feeling of that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Very much
scored way too early.
Yeah, yeah. It was that personified, that theory that scoring early is a bad thing for you, because frayed nerves for such a long time during the game.
One thing that's really interesting about that game is that on YouTube, there always used to be, because I watched it ages ago. There used to be a 10-minute clip on YouTube of the opening 10 minutes of the TV broadcast of this game.
Hansen talking about, I think they can do it. Like, they pack the midfield, Muller up top, and it's just like, you know, I think we could do this.
Yeah. But he also, what they did that, he did a bit of Hansen. And
Hullet was in there as well.
A bit of Hullet and Dez. Mm. Big Dez Larnham. And then they just cut to the crowd.
Yeah.
And they just left the crowd. Half it had no commentator for like 5 or 6 minutes of the camera just going around the crowd picking people out.
Really?
Patches of people start singing, the camera go to that. And it was the most chilled out, weird TV broadcast compared to what telly's like now.
It's
worth checking out if you can get hold of it.
It's very strange.
Really weird. And every so often it cut to Badil and Skinner giving it all that.
You'd
see
almost like Wimbledon style coverage.
You'd
see men who hadn't left behind the 80s mullet and moustache combos.
You still find that now.
Not as plentiful.
No.
It was extraordinary, wasn't it? And I don't think I've watched an England game that was so tense. I think obviously because it was at Wembley as well.
I think the closest there's been to that has been the 98 World Cup against Argentina.
There's so much drama in it.
But this was incredibly tense.
Oh, it was. And then Kuntz, of course, scored the equaliser 16 minutes in. So two early goals.
Didn't Kuntz have a goal disallowed as well?
There was a German goal disallowed. It might well have been Kuntz.
Didn't Kuntz have a funny name?
Funny because it sounds like a swear word.
Stefan. he did score, and everyone. I think that was an extra time, because I think it would have been the golden goal. Because I just remember everyone just went, "Oh, that's
it." Yeah.
Oh, they're not giving it.
Yeah.
But in, I mean, let's zoom.
Not a lot of pushing for that goal,
either. Yeah, that, yeah, it was almost as if there was, well. So in extra time, Darren Anderton hits the post, and then comes the moment that makes you wince every time you see it on television, when the ball goes out to Alan Shearer, who volleys it agonisingly across the 6-yard box. Gascoigne checks his run, and then goes in, and it's a toenail away from putting this into the final.
But he appears to go lead with the wrong foot for me, and I'm like, if he just really, really used his considerable weight.
But then, but this is the thing. This is the thing. You still look at that clip and you go, yeah, but. If
he got he got a little bit of it,
you can still score. You know, it's like,
oh god. And there seems to be a theory from some people that just think, like, if he'd had one less pie, like, in his life, he'd have had the extra sort of millimetre of pace.
But it happened again, like 2 minutes later as well. That was the worst thing about it. Pretty much the same chance, and he was a lot further away for that one. But I mean, sickening.
And then it went to penalties. And what I will say actually about the penalties is the quality of that shootout was top notch. Mm.
11 penalties.
11 superb penalties. I think Venables had practiced penalties with
no point.
Some of them had practiced penalties. Southgate hadn't.
Pierce went for a drill bottom left. He did. Shearer went bottom right. There was a lot. There was a lot in the right off the post, as I recall.
Mm. Yeah, I think
Sheringham top corner.
What's stuck out for me that worried me at the time, I remember being concerned about it at the time, was that Pierce's celebration was basically a carbon copy of his celebration against Spain, and it almost felt like it was over-egging it.
He just did a thumbs up.
Really, I remember him screaming again as well.
Gascoigne did a bigger one as well. He sort of went, did his thing.
Maybe I misremembered that.
I think England got a little bit kind of, oh, well, we've won a shootout here before. And every England penalty that went in, it was away, because you thought Seaman will save this. Mm. And the Germans just kept coolly knocking them in. And then Southgate, who hadn't practiced penalties, went up there and he missed. And it was like,
and it was a weak penalty as well, wasn't it?
It was like, oh, hang on a minute here. And then, of course, Andreas Möller said, thank you very much. Yes. And smashed the ball in. And that famous celebration.
Oh, God, I could have killed him.
Walked right out. Yeah, he was, wasn't he?
It was a camp celebration to get yourself into the final.
But I look at it now, it's funny. It's funny. It wasn't funny at the time,
though. No, it's still not funny.
And the Germans went through to play the Czech Republic, incredibly, who'd met each other in the group stages, and Germany quite happily dispatched them 2-0.
Yeah, we were all supporting the Czech Republic at that point.
Everybody, I think
because we're bitter.
I think some Germans were supporting the Czech Republic. Both teams had chances. If you look at the game again, both teams had chances.
They could bear to.
Before Pobolski was brought down and Czech Republic won a penalty, and everyone thought, uh-oh.
Yeah.
And Berger hammered it home, and it was like, this might not be so bad.
This is the second best thing to win in.
That got him a move.
Yeah, it is. Well, the unthinkable was on. However, in the 69th minute, Bertie Vogts thought, right, Scholl, Mehmet Scholl, you're coming off. Let's bring on Oliver Bierhoff.
Yeah.
Not that long
I
after
love
that.
Oliver Bierhoff.
Yeah.
A header.
Amazing. He will do that. It's a guaranteed headed goal.
Udinese enjoyed his services for a long time. I think it was Ziga who knocked the ball in a close range header. It was 1-1. And when it went 1-1, you thought, at least we're going to be put out by the winners. Went into extra time. It was golden goal, as I said before. It hadn't been used before. I don't think we'd seen a golden goal on the big stage.
Well, that was the first ever one, I think, wasn't it, in an international?
In an international, I think it was, yeah.
Wasn't it trialled in Italy? Everything gets trialled in Italy. Everything.
A lot of Italian players as well.
And it was a little bit of a poor way to finish the tournament, wasn't it?
It's always an anticlimax.
A deflected goal. The keeper might have done.
It was rubbish. It was rubbish.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, you know, the best team, probably the best team, won that tournament. But
the more clinical team won.
Yeah, exactly. But it was.
Bierhoff enjoyed it.
He did. Yeah. It was a bit of a crappy goal to finish it, but a thoroughly enjoyable tournament nevertheless. And the Queen gave the Germans the trophy, and she was off, and so were they.
Yeah.
And then they sung.
Well, she's German anyway.
Yeah. And then they sung "It's Coming Home" on their return to Germany, and have sung it at us many times
since. It's also worth pointing out it's the first trophy they won under their since their reunification. So significant for them, massively.
And the last one.
Yeah,
they've won, isn't it? It's been a little while since Germany have won a tournament. They've been in the final. Looming indeed.
Yeah. I feel sorry for the Slovakians.
Yeah.
Alan Shearer did win the Golden Boot with 5 goals.
Scant consolation.
Yeah.
We did all right in Golden Boots.
Yeah, Lineker had one, didn't he?
That's it. Couple.
Defoe this year.
Carol.
Yeah.
Carol.
Carol this year.
Could be. It could be. But Euro 96, ladies and gentlemen, coming into the Dean Medals Hall of Fame. Hey.
I remember seeing a roundup of Euro 96 that was on ITV. It was not even that long ago, maybe about 5 years ago now. And just getting really into it, being really excited again. And then just being absolutely crushed at seeing England go out again. All this old emotions came back up. It was.
And don't forget, the Dean Winners Hall of Fame is sponsored by kitbag.com. Follow them on Twitter, kitbaguk, and RT our tweets for a chance to win a £50 voucher.
Hot damn.
Hot diggity dog.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is it for this week. If you want to get in touch with us, the email address is show@thefootballramble.com, and the website is thefootballramble.com.
Yes, and by the time this show comes out, fingers crossed, touch wood, all that sort of stuff, we should have a brand new thefootballramble.com with loads more content.
No way.
Way,
pal.
There's loads of stuff, far too much for me to tell you on this show, so get yourself over there, thefootballramble.com.
Marcus is running down his top 10 musicals. That's something I'm looking forward to.
Moonwalker's number one.
He keeps pushing me about that. He keeps emailing to me every week. Wondering why I'm not being published. He
keeps changing though, weirdly.
Yeah. You've got to make your mind up. That's the problem.
Starlet though. Express, you Moonwalker.
You can't have Moonwalker 10 in a row.
As Joe Pesci says in that film, I just want everyone to be cool. And no one's going to take drugs because of me.
And I will not commission your Oasis themed musical either.
I'll go alone. Go to. Right Jimmy.
I have a couple of notices as well. I have a couple more Edinburgh preview shows. One on the 1st of June, which is a Friday night at the Hanbury Arms in Islington. You can get tickets on wegottickets.com. Another one on the 5th of June, which is a Tuesday night at the Queen's Head in Piccadilly Circus. Please come along if you can. It would be awesome. And if you are going to the Edinburgh Festival, tickets for my show are available at underbelly.co.uk.
It's better than Moonwalker.
It is indeed.
Any more for any more?
Nope.
Say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Pete.
Goodbye.
And say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
We'll see you a week on Thursday, the 7th of June.
England against Germany, the second semi-final of Euro 96. Sporting history waiting to be made. And the winners now know that they will play the Czech Republic in the final on Sunday. The Czechs got through on penalties against France earlier.
Now I think England can win the game. You know, the way the Germans line up, they'll pack the middle of the park, they've only got Kuntz up front.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye again.
Goodbye.
Say it sexier.
Goodbye.
Say it louder.
Goodbye.
Say it higher.
Goodbye.
Say it French.
Au revoir. Elsewhere in the FIFA house, South Sudan, which gained its independence last year, has become FIFA's 2009th member.
No, it hasn't.
2009.
Sorry.
I'm trying to think of a sticker based
gag.
Pun gags for footballers.
He's got good feet for a big sticker.
No, Glue Deck McClosco.
Nice.
Have you got a golf one? A DCV Ballesteros. Did he play golf?
Early 90s Italian forward player Giuseppe Giapponini.
Yeah. Alright. What about old
tennis player Michael Stick? Huh?
No, it's tennis.
He's not in golf earlier. He didn't ever get in for golf.
Not welcome.
Strike up the band.
Album Shearer.
Pick that up now, otherwise I'm gonna start hurting people. No,
come on.
Have we got a spare packet there?
We don't need it.
You are a spare packet.
Convolute it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.